This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This episode of the Art of Manliness podcast is brought to you by the Art of Manliness store. Yes, we have a store where we sell swag, merch, whatever it is you want to call it. We got t-shirts, we've got posters featuring Rudyard Kipling's poem, If, Theodore Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech. We also have some pretty cool coffee mugs. They're hefty, big fan of it. Also got our one-of-a-kind Ben Franklin Virtue Journal. Got some other stuff there. Go check it out, store.artofmanliness.com. And if it's your first purchase, use code AOMPODCAST at checkout. You get 10% off your first purchase. All your purchases from the Art of Manliness stores help support the podcast as well as the content we produce on artofmanliness.com. So go check it out, store.artofmanliness.com. Code AOMPODCAST for 10% off. Thank you.
Welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Well, I don't know about you guys, but every now and then I have this dream or fantasy that of going out to Vermont, buying some land and becoming a yeoman farmer. You know, to me that just sounds really cool. But if I'm honest with myself, that's never going to happen. But today's guest actually did that. His name is Forrest Pritchard. He's the owner of Smith Meadows Farm, located in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. This is an eighth generation family farm. This farm has been in his family for eight generations. And he just came out with a book called Gaining Ground. And it's basically his story of how he saved the family farm, because before he took it over, it was in pretty bad shape and on the verge of being sold. And he decided to change directions in his life and become a farmer. So today we're going to talk about his story. We're going to talk a bit about his book, Gaining Ground. So listen in. Well, Forrest, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Brett. I'm honored to have anything to do with the Art of Manliness.
Well,
thanks for inviting me.
Well, you're very welcome. You're a farmer, which is a manly profession. Goes back thousands of years. So it's very appropriate that you're on the Art of Manliness podcast. Let's talk a little about your history before we get into kind of what your book's about. Your farm that you run is Smith Meadows. This is a seventh generation farm, right? It's been in your family for seven generations, a long time. You grew up on this farm, working on it with your grandfather and your dad, and to an extent. When you were a kid, was farming something you saw yourself doing? Like when you were in high school, like, yeah, I'm going to be a farmer. Were you ready to get out of town and head to the big city?
What I wanted to do more than anything when I was a kid was be a superhero. You know, I wanted to be Spider-Man, Devil, and I thought my cousin Peter was the luckiest guy on the planet because he had the first name like Peter Parker.
Oh, nice.
And I was stuck with this crummy name Forrest, which didn't serve me till Forrest Gump came along about 30 years later, whatever. But no, I mean, you know, I think, you know, in the book I mentioned at one point, like I was playing Star Wars as a kid, and, you know, everybody in our generation and, you know, now more generations are going to play Star Wars and Indiana Jones and A-Team and all these iconic shows of our childhood. But I don't think it was any accident, you know, like Luke Skywalker, you know, George Lucas wrote that character as a farm kid, you know, farm kids are dreamers and farming. Farming can be like a, you know, pretty confining feel, where dreams can sometimes, you know, be squelched or made to fit inside a box. So, you know, I was lucky as a kid. I wasn't made to do farm chores. I wasn't like, you know, now you're five, get out and make some hay kind of thing. You better be driving this tractor by now. I was given a chance to be a kid. And that's not to say, like, you know, I didn't participate and I didn't grow up on the farm and I wasn't out there all the time, because I was, you know, the barefoot Huckleberry Finn kind of kid, you know, running around the fields. But I was also allowed to, like, have a childhood, you know, have an ability to kind of have fun as a kid. So, I mean, I think probably more than anything, kind of being given that freedom by my elders to be respectful of that childhood period and value it, led me to want to farm. Because then I was able to not feel like miserable, not feel encumbered by a bunch of chores. And I didn't have that Luke Skywalker feeling where it's like, you know, Luke, go clean the moisture evaporators. Oh, you know, I want to go play with my friends kind of thing. So,
you wanted to be a superhero. So, like, yeah, farming really wasn't pushed on you, right, I guess.
Right.
When did you decide, like, farming is what you wanted to do? I mean, that's a big decision, because if a lot of people who are listening don't know, like, farming is an expensive job. There's a lot of expenses that go along with the profession.
Right.
So how did you decide to, you know, make that leap? I mean, did you feel called to it, or was there some moment where you're like, yeah, this is what I have to do?
I think it was definitely a bit of both. There's an undeniable sense of stewardship that's just kind of handed down, and you don't have to spend long, being around a farm. You know, you and I were talking earlier about your feelings, like when you go to visit Vermont, for example. Like, there's just something when you step into these small farm towns and this era of sustainability and seasonality that just resonates. It's hard not to feel that resonate. I mean, unless you were, you know, spend your whole life in Las Vegas or something. I don't know, like, where you'd have to live. Apologies to lifetime residents of Las Vegas. I just blew it. I mean, the other side of all that is when you've got this kind of, like, cultural resonance on one side, but then you're like, you're 19, you're 20 years old, and you're thinking, you know, what are you going to do with your life? Are you going to be an English major? Are you going to go to law school? You know, are you going to drop out and flip hamburgers? And you're driving down the road, and you see farms, literally, that you grew up seeing all your life, or you visited when you were a 4-H'er, or you went over to your friend's place and played in his barnyard. And they're being bulldozed straight down to the ground, okay? And I'm talking, like, you know, the late 80s, early 90s in the Shenandoah Valley. Farms were not being saved then. Farms were being pushed out for housing developments. And that's just a really tangible, kind of visceral thing that just hits you in the gut. You know, you're driving to town in one direction, and by the time you run your errands and you come back, the barn that you've seen there for your whole life is gone. It's just like there's dirt and there's bulldozers there. So, you know, it doesn't take a huge stretch of the imagination to say, look, you know, could that be our place? You know, we're not doing so well. You know, I hear my parents grumbling over the bills, and grandpa's gone, and, you know, he was the last person to be farming. You know, what kind of creative person do you have to be to say, like, you know, the writing might be on the wall if we don't do something?
Yeah, that was interesting. You're talking about how just, like, bulldozing land, right? And, like, putting development on there,
sure.
Like shopping. Like, yeah, it's like, it's a sense of place, right? Like, you feel connected to the land.
Right.
You know, even here in Tulsa, like, just in the past, you know, few years I've lived here, there's been a lot of development, and you, like, see it go up, and, like, I don't know. Yeah. You feel like a part of you is missing, you know, 'cause you see this, like, beautiful land that was once there, not there anymore.
Exactly. I mean, there's something about it that's just, it kind of makes you say, like, how? Like, what? You know, like, okay. But it doesn't feel like a really good okay sometimes. Sometimes it's like, really? You know, like, that's what's happening to that farm. Like, it's turning into, like, a, you know, another Subway, you know, $5 foot long kind of thing. Okay, well, here we go. And there's going to be a parking lot and, you know, but, you know, at a certain point, like, how many battles can we pick and how many battles can we win? And, you have to say, like, look, I've got this family farm. I can't save family farms everywhere, but I can give a try on my own land. And that's kind of like, you know, when I was 20, 21, that's pretty much like what I was feeling.
Yeah, so 2021. So were you done with college, or were you still in college at this time?
Yeah, I was still in college when I was struggling with some of this stuff. I ended up bailing in geology because I went to a liberal arts school and they didn't have like an ag or environmental track. So geology started to resonate with me and soil studies. And that's definitely where my interest started to go about that time.
All right. So you mentioned that you mentioned a word when you were talking about the type of farming you do. You do sustainable farming. For our readers who aren't familiar with it, can you just briefly describe the difference between sustainable farming, what you do, and typical industrial farming that goes on?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. And just to, you know, kind of throw out like a Webster's definition of sustainable farming, you know, the word sustainable means, you know, not to repeat the own word in its definition, but it sustains itself. It's like, it's kind of a self-perpetuating mechanism. And for farming, that is, you know, it's commonly associated with, you know, organics and local and non-use of chemicals and things like that. But sustainable isn't just about production methods. It's about finances and the economics of things too. You know, the overarching theme of sustainability is to not only grow things in a way that nature provides a sustainability, but the economics are sound, they're plausible, and they're repeatable. So getting back to your question, like basically what we do is we do have an organic model where we don't use any commercial fertilizers, we use no antibiotics, we use no hormones, and we market our food locally to customers that really care about this stuff, that care about, you know, were their animals raised humanely? Is this money that they're spending going back to green space? Is the dollars going to be reinvested in the local hardware store, in the local feed store, you know, stay in this area? And, you know, I want to back up one second and say, like, I've got no bone to pick with the other side, with conventional agriculture. You know, nothing in my book is about, like, you know, this side's right and the other side's wrong. Basically, what we do is we offer people an alternative. So what the alternative, you know, growing up that I saw to what I do now is how most of our food is still raised in this country. I mean, 97% and onward of the food that, you know, you'll get at McDonald's or you'll get at Safeway or Walmart or wherever you shop is raised with chemical usage, confinement, feedlot practices, grain that's animals that are strictly grain fed and then fed antibiotics as a byproduct of grain feeding, food that has been literally trucked thousands of miles, you know, with a plume of diesel smoke behind it. And, you know, a little bit of that might seem like kind of ivory tower and, you know, kind of, oh, well, you know, there's an organic farmer up on a soapbox kind of thing. And like, I get that, like, you know, when we're disconnected from our food, it's hard to say, like, you know, is organic really better or conventional really better? Well, you know, I'm not trying to persuade anybody like to eat organic or to, eat however they want. But when you've stood on your family's front porch on a failing farm and you've been raising corn and soybeans conventionally, which I did about 15 years ago, and you get handed a check for $18, okay, like your whole harvest gets turned over and you get basically a $20 bill for a year's worth of work, man, you know, that's going to cause anybody to rethink things. And that's exactly what happened to me. That persuaded itself. You know, I required no additional persuasion.
Yeah. So talk about a little bit. Let's back up here. So you guys primarily raise livestock, right? Is that your kind of the main?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, what are some of the benefits of the meat or the product or the heart? I don't know,
sure,
what you call it, of doing it sustainably. Yeah. I mean, what are some of the differences between,
sure,
like, cows who are grass fed between a cow who's corn fed?
Of course. Yeah. And I should back up a second because you just kind of sort of answered my question for me. I said we raise livestock. What we really do is we raise grass on our farm. We are a pasture farm. And like, you know, why am I going to put like, you know, big asterisk neon light, over top of this is because everything that we do on our farm goes back to sustainability. And like, you know, if people out there listening, you know, just think about your lawn, for example, or the park, you know, the park that's in your neighborhood. There's grass in the park. Okay. Like how does the grass grow? Let's just break it down real quick. We got sunshine, we got rain, and we got soil fertility. Okay. Now we can go out and, you know, put some Scott's Miracle-Gro on stuff. Okay. But like how many, you know, $20-$50 bags of Scott's Miracle-Gro can we sustain? Okay. So then it gets back to like issues of sustainability. And what we've got is a built-in natural system where we take free sunshine and we take free rain and we couple that with natural soil fertility that's just like, you know, available to us. And that's really challenging how we can argue that that's not a self-sustaining system. I mean, that's the circle of life in a nutshell right there.
Yeah, so it's something that could go on forever, right?
Exactly. Exactly. That's my whole point. So, you know, some of this is like some bigger picture thinking to get down to like what ends up on your plate when you shop at a farmer's market, when you take home like a, you know, grass-fed ribeye steak or something. Okay. Yes, that's delicious. And you're like, you got to talk to the farmer and, you know, everybody feels like, you know, warm and fuzzy for a minute, but we can like really go backwards and like trace this and say, you know, what is the root of sustainability here? Pun intended, because the root, you know, is these roots down in the soil. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a grass-fed animal and a grass-fed production model, and we're going to compare that with a grain-fed model. And the contrast is very stark. And not, you know, not to be like Debbie Downer or anything, but you know, I'm not interested, like I said. Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't want to be that guy. But I mean, you know, far more eloquent people have spoken about this, and the internet has got, you know, 10 million and one images of animals in confinement. And all you have to do is test this with your nose, okay? Have you ever been driving down an interstate highway? And all of a sudden, you know, you're listening to the radio and everything's great. And you just catch a whiff of something. And you're like, oh, what, you know, what is that smell?
There's a big, like one in Amarillo, right outside of Amarillo, Texas. Whenever we'd go to Albuquerque to see my grandpa, it was the worst smelling thing. It was like you had to hold your breath for 5 minutes.
There's something wrong with that, Brett.
Yeah.
I want your listeners to like think about that for a second. Like, why, you know, why when we smell something like rotten in our refrigerator or like, you know, something dead, do we like recoil like on like kind of on a, you know, a molecular level? You know, we've been just kind of for generations been taught like, you know, that bad. This good, you know, on the kind of caveman speak, you know, like don't eat this, you know? And so, you know, when we have to drive down the highway for like 5 miles with the windows rolled up and the air conditioner on full blast because the smell is so bad, just imagine if you're one of those animals or, you know, or one of those people working in that feedlot where there's 10,000 animals standing in their own excrement and being fed grain that has been trucked, you know, from, you know, North Dakota down to, you know, Texas, you know, and that trail of stuff. And there's, you know, there's no sustainability when animals they've evolved to eat grass. There's no explanation for giving them a monoculture diet of just pure corn. And quite frankly, their digestive system rebels against it, which is why antibiotic use is almost mandatory in a confinement system. So I'm going to step off my soapbox for a minute, catch my breath.
No. Well, it makes sense. I mean, yeah, it is unsustainable, I guess, right? Like it just doesn't make any sense. So here you feed them this grain that like their body's not, I guess, really designed for. So as a consequence, you have to give them more antibiotics, which probably isn't good for the person eating it. You know, like I don't want to...
Precisely.
You know, so, I think getting this back to like the manliness thing. I think I've read studies about how the hormones in some grain fed beef can affect testosterone levels.
Of course. See, soy is loaded with estrogen.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, what's the coincidence when we've got a bunch of 10-year-old boys running around and we kind of say to myself, my God, does that kid need a bra? I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not joking. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to like be, you know, left wing and organic lovey dovey to be like, you know, what's going on with some of these kids?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a direct consequence between what we're putting in our food, and fueling ourselves with. Okay. And if we're going to fuel ourselves with things that come from natural soil, like our ancestors ate, and this is where like the whole paleo thing, you know, eat like a dinosaur and all this stuff, you know, it resonates.
Yeah.
I think.
For sure. One of the things that stuck out to me the most, or not the most, but what I thought was really interesting, you started raising hogs or pigs.
Mm-hmm.
And I found fascinating is that, the way you guys do it, like there's a system that you guys do, right? And what I found interesting is that, you know, usually we think of pigs like, oh, they just like wallow in their own filth and like they enjoy being, but you found that like the pigs actually, they go to a place to like do their business and then they come back somewhere else. And like, it actually, like raising pigs isn't very stinky. It actually smells kind of sweet if you do it right.
Exactly. Yeah. Our pigs smell like maple syrup. It's the closest, like, kind of, like, visual, like sensory clue I can attribute it to.
That was the most bizarre, because, like, that's so counterintuitive, because I think of, oh, you raise a pig, it's just, like, sitting in its slop, and it's just nasty. Why would you want to eat that? Even though I love bacon.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we give a pig no choice but to sit in its own slop, that's where it's going to sit, you know? But, you know, do we have the courage and the wisdom to say like, okay, let's give this pig some different choices and be able to have like the patience, you know, to, you know, talk about like some positive male attributes, you know, wisdom, courage, and patience.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pretty good platform right there. And to go back and say like, look, let's watch this pig. Let it express itself. Is there some way that we can reach an intersection of the pig being able to like express its pigness? Okay. And us being as farmers to be able to say like, look, we can raise this animal sensibly at the same time, you know, and that's going to be a win-win. That's going to be a pig that's probably going to grow more quickly. It's going to put out a much more flavorful meat by being able to like, you know, eat the minerals out of the soil and mineralize its body, which it cannot do, by the way, if it's just eating corn all day long and living in its own filth. And it's going to create a sustainable story for people to come out and like visit local farms, see this, smell with their own nose, nothing. They're just going to smell fresh air, which is what you expect to smell when you go to a farm. You know, people go out to the country to smell fresh air. They don't go out there to smell hog excrement.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, all this stuff just gets back to like what can be sustainable. Now don't get me wrong. The truly sustainable animals I feel on our farm are our grass fed cattle and our grass fed sheep. Because those are the animals that are out there, you know, eating clover, eating these diverse grasses. And that's a closed loop of sustainability. Our pigs and our chickens are omnivores. So we do give them some free choice grain as a component of their diet.
Mm-hmm.
But that all goes back into a circle of, okay, we're producing some product and their manure, which is able to be naturally distributed across the pasture because we rotate the pigs across pasture very intensively from a management standpoint, goes back to doing what? Fertilizing the grass for the cattle, for the sheep, you know? So
yeah, it's
just kind of how we...
Being economical in every aspect.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can go out with tractors and get chemical fertilizers and ring up big bills for ourselves. And by the way, you know, Philip,
it's wedding season. And while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining. On the pants, you can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy to follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. If you're like me, you've probably signed up for subscription services, but then you forgot about them. I'm talking about newsletters, streaming services, things like that. Well, with the personal finance app Rocket Money, it can help you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions. It can also monitor your spending and help you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I had a chance to use Rocket Money, connected it to my checking account, and it found a bunch of subscription services that I forgot about. I was able to cancel them, and I was able to save a lot of money because the stuff adds up. Besides canceling your unwanted subscriptions, Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lower bills for you, up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill, and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with customer service for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/manliness. That's rocketmoney.com/manliness. rocketmoney.com/manliness. Have you ever been to an event where you just had to get the best seats? Like maybe it was a concert for your favorite band, or maybe it was an important game for your favorite team. Well, to do that, you had to set an alarm to get the tickets as soon as they went on sale. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you are trying to hire for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best people fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness, MANLINESS. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, picture that thing you've always wanted to learn. Now picture learning it from the person who's literally the best at it in the world. That's what you get with Masterclass. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors, and a lot of them are former AOM podcast guests. So for example, you can learn The Art of Negotiation from Chris Voss. We had him on the podcast. Leadership from Jocko Willink, another AOM podcast guest. Writing from Malcolm Gladwell, another AOM podcast guest. You name it, Masterclass has it. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. So I did the masterclass with Chris Voss on negotiation. Very well done. He talks about tactical empathy, how to mirror somebody so that you can develop rapport with them. So if you enjoyed that podcast I did with Chris Voss several years ago about his book, Never Split the Difference, you're going to love this masterclass. And right now, AOM listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/AOM. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/AOM. masterclass.com/AOM. Check out the negotiation class with Chris Voss.
Tractor with fuel and repair it when it breaks down and put it in a barn for 11 months out of the year when it's not being used. Or, you know, I could run a bunch of pigs out there. They look beautiful. They smell great. They taste fabulous when you put them on your plate. It's a humane way to treat our animals. You know, whether you're vegetarian or you're an omnivore, far more humane than the way most animals are raised. And at the end of the day, their manure doesn't even have to be cleaned up. It just goes around to the pasture, and it fertilizes the grass.
It's awesome. So it's the circle of life. It's a beautiful thing.
I mean, what can I say? I didn't invent it. I'm just participating.
We're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. If you made a goal for yourself to read the great books of the Western world but have had trouble following through with it, check out Online Great Books. It's an online platform. You sign up. They're going to mail you a physical copy of the book you're going to read. So if you're reading Republic that month, they're going to send you a physical copy of Plato's Republic. You're going to read it. They're going to give you a reading schedule, send you reminders so you keep pace with your reading. You'll be assigned to a class where you can discuss the book in the form. And at the end of the month, you'll have a video seminar where you can talk about this in real time. It's a great way. You have accountability. Plus, you have someone to talk to about this stuff. and sort through this and think through it. So if you'd like to check this out, go over to onlinegreatbooks.com. And when you're ready to sign up, use code AOM at checkout to save 25% off your first 3 months. Again, onlinegreatbooks.com, code AOM at checkout to save 25% off your first 3 months. And now back to the show.
All right. So you decided to get into farming. You're going to go the sustainable route. But this wasn't an overnight success, right? It was rough going in the beginning. What were the biggest obstacles at the very beginning of your journey to become a sustainable farmer?
Oh man, that one's, I don't even have to think about that one. It was a negative peer pressure.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all the voices, and you know, I think I put that right at the end of chapter one in the book. It's like, you know, this is what all the voices were trying to tell me when I get that check for $18, you know, like, you can't do it. Just like, get it. God, why, you know, okay, you've had a few months to, like, you know, dick around on the farm. Now get yourself a haircut and a polo shirt and go get a job, you know?
Yeah.
And that wasn't just all my friends who a generation before would have been young farmers and were now, you know, putting on khaki pants and finding jobs in Washington, D.C., which is about an hour from our farm. That was other farmers, okay, saying that. I mean, they weren't, you know, they were discouraging because for all through the 1960s, the 70s, the 80s, commodity prices were just going down, down, down. You know, I'm not making this up. You can pull up, you know, umpteen different charts on this where commodity prices diverge from the cost of living. Okay, it's just like a big, you know, greater than symbol. Commodity prices kind of flatlined and trickled down in one direction, and the cost of living went up. And the gap in between, as that V-shaped diagram keeps growing over the years, the gap in between becomes insurmountable to bridge. Okay, and by 1996, when I was standing on looking over our farm and thinking about becoming a farmer, that gap was just about as wide as it had ever been. So, you know, needless to say, I could not find many farmers in my area that were like, you know, let's sign you up, pal. You know, let's get you a straw hat, overalls, and get you started. You know, they were like, you know, do anything but farm.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I guess too, I think you're talking about commodity prices. I guess that a lot of that has to do with subsidies, right? Farm subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
That's part of the problem. A lot of farms that used to grow diverse, you know, products, produce, animals, because that wasn't where the money was at, they started diverting all that land and resource to, like, soy, wheat,
of course,
corn.
Soy, corn, bean, wheat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, exactly. I guess that's like, that was the way you were supposed to do it. So when you came along and said, hey, yeah, I want to, like, feed my cows grass and I got an orchard. I want to try doing some stuff there. People were kind of like, a lot of the farmers like, what planet are you from, son? Or
Brett, I literally got laughed at one point. Okay. And I write about it a little bit. And, you know, it's still like one of those things that, you know, makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck from, like, you know, kind of the indignity of it. You know, I still like take umbrage, you know, it's like, you know, I'm serving at this party. And, you know, I'm working as a caterer to, like, pay as a server for a catering company, to help pay my bills while I try to farm. You know, this is like my night job. I'm serving, like, cucumber sandwiches to people. I'm at this party and I'm telling these farmers, you know, in a 30-second little break, like, what I'm up to. And, you know, they literally, after I get done telling them that I'm going to sell grass-fed beef and take it to farmer's market and, you know, we're going to get, like, local customers, they turned to each other and made eye contact. It's like one of those moments where, like, they just couldn't help but laugh. You know, it's like, who's going to laugh first? And they just, like, burst into laughter. And, you know, I must have turned red from the tips of my ears down to my toes, you know. So
what kept you going? I mean, through all those, I mean, like, you know, from the book, it took a while for you to, like, even start making a profit, and the profits you made were very small, like $18, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what kept you going through all the negativity and, I mean, the lack of results? I mean, what kept you going?
Right. You know, if we think about farming, you know, farming and writing both are not really notorious for being great careers from a financial standpoint. Okay, mm-hmm. There's a reason why people go to law school and medical school and all these things. So, I had help from both my parents. They realized that they could not farm. Okay, again, keep in mind this is the late 70s, early 80s, when stock market was doing very well and the economy was going strong and all this stuff, but commodity prices were just in the toilet. So both my parents, they were not farmers. They both had off-farm jobs in Washington, D.C., in another local big town. So when I came along, like, there was no logical way for me to say, like, I'm going to make a living here until I had enough time to, like, either figure it out or fail trying, like, fail nobly. Okay. Like, you gave it a hell of a go. You know, it's been 4 years and, you know, it's not working out, kind of thing. So, you know, I'm just constantly grateful for my parents and to, like, believe in me, you know, and what greater honor can anybody have than, like, you know, your dad, who was working a desk job in D.C., be like, look, son, like, I don't really think it's going to work out. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but, like, I love you, man, you know, mm-hmm. and we're, you know, I'm going to stick behind you as long as you keep going. And, you know, in a lot of ways, this book was kind of written in gratitude to that spirit. It's just a spirit of something bigger than yourself. Yeah. You know, and that's the best way I can describe farming. It's like a commitment to a faith and spirituality that's just bigger than any of us.
I love that. I love that so much. Makes me want to be a farmer right now. So you're a big success now, right? You got a book, the farm is thriving. I mean, it's like you have multiple streams of revenue coming in. I mean, it's like a little corporation almost, right? What was the tipping point for you? Was there a particular moment, or were there moments where you're like, man, yeah, this is working. I can make this a success.
The moment was when I got interviewed by Art of Manliness for a podcast. It's living history, folks.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, the easiest way I can answer that is, like, you know, it was like an overnight success after 15 years.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, this guy's a success, right? Overnight, just overnight, over and over and over again. Like, the biggest thing I can attribute any of this to is, like, my customers believing me. Okay. Like, you know, in the acknowledgments, I say thank you. It's like the last thing I say to my customers. And nothing I could have done could have happened if my customers didn't say, like, look, there's this 25-year-old guy. He's on the back of a pickup truck. He's wearing a bandana and a t-shirt with no sleeves on it. Like, who in their right mind would buy, like, frozen ground beef on a street corner from, like, a human that looked like me?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, if they didn't have, like, a greater mission about what they were about, like, what did they value? You know, and my customers just bring me their values. And that's, like, you know, about humane raising of animals, about, like, you know, organic growing practices. It's about, they really want to support, like, small family farms that are just, like, with transparent growing practices. You know, they value the fact that they can get in their car and drive out to my farm and just, like, be able to walk around and open the barn doors. And they're not going to see, like, bags of chemicals that, like, I'm keeping, like, in the back of the shed. You know what I mean? It basically all comes down to, you know, people believing you. And after a while, if you get enough people believing in you, then, you start to rock and roll a little bit.
So what's the typical day on the farm like for you? I mean, is it, like, really, like, what you read about in those books, or, like, you grew up watching in old movies where you wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning? I mean, is that what it's like? I mean, what kind of walks through your day?
Sure. I'm not exactly sure what a typical day really is after after 17 years of farming. There is some routine in it. We attend 7 farmers markets in Washington, D.C. every weekend. That doesn't mean, like, from May through October. That's year round. Okay.
Wow.
We have a year round food platform in the form of livestock. You know, livestock, there's seasonality to it. Don't get me wrong. Like, we only raise our chickens, for example, in the summertime when the grass is out, our meat chickens, I should say. But everything else, even our laying hens, you know, I've got dozens of pictures of chickens out in the snow year after year after year. So, like, what's a typical day? If aside from our weekends where we attend farmers markets, Monday through Friday is going to be like just absolutely fraught with variability. It could be anything from, you know, putting up a new fence to taking a chainsaw out to a tree that just fell on the new fence. You know, it can be changing the oil in our truck as preventative, you know, in our 13-year-old farm truck, to finding out that because we didn't change the oil, like, the head gasket went on it. You know, now we got to get the truck to the shop. You know, this morning I worked a bunch of sheep, trimmed hooves, checked the parasites, fixed a flat tire on a livestock trailer, and picked up my farmhand for lunch because his truck was out of commission, and like ran him over to where he lives. You know, that might not sound very like romantic, but that's like my typical day, man. Working with livestock, checking on pastures, making sure stuff isn't broken. And fixing it.
Well, you sound like you had a much manlier morning than I did. Like, I went to the post office and I went to Office Depot.
And hey, bought, man, I like the post office.
And I bought some envelopes. So that's not very manly. I need to. You make me feel inadequate.
Well, you know, that's not intentional for sure. I love a good envelope, man.
Yeah. Who doesn't? All right. So, people who are listening to this podcast and are like, man, I want to eat a pig that smells like maple syrup. Okay. Or I want a cow, like, I want to support this sort of sustainable farming. I want to reap the benefits of this. What can these people who are listening, these guys who are listening, what can they do to support sustainable farming?
Right. The best answer I can give to that, like, the easiest answer is, and it's easier than ever, frankly, is know your farmer. Okay. Know your farmer. Like, anybody that's out there listening right now, tell me who your farmer is. Like, who pops to mind? I want a face and a name. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, who's your doctor? Okay. Who works in your office? You know, who's your kid's soccer coach? You know, like, why do we know all these names and faces? Like, but we don't know who our farmer is. Okay. Or our farmers, plural. So the easiest thing to do is go know your farmer. Where do you find a farmer? You find them at farmers markets. Okay, you find them through CSA, which is an acronym for community supported agriculture or community subscription agriculture. You can find them through buying clubs, where someone in your neighborhood's like, "Hey, I know like you're too busy to like go out and find your farmer, but like I know this person. I've been out to their farm. I'm going to like pull a bunch of food because I've got like a 20 cubic foot chest freezer, you know, and a big refrigerator in my garage that I'm not using. And we're going to have like a drop off for this farmer."
So you can go to a farm and like say, "I want to buy a cow," right? Like, if you wanted to.
Yeah, sure. Of course. That's like a fourth option. Yeah. And like, my greater point is like, there are myriad options, and like, I'm not like blowing smoke. Like, these are real things. Okay. Like, farmers markets, there's like, you know, it's one in an economy for the last 10 years where all you hear about is like how bad the economy is, like, you know, vote the bums out of office. They're gridlocked. They can't get the economy going. Well, guess what? Like, farmers markets in the past 10 years have gone from like something like 500 nationally to like 7,000 or 8,000.
Wow.
Okay. And that's growth like any industry would be incredibly envious of. And this isn't like, you know, let's make some more widgets in Hong Kong. Okay. We need more action figures because Star Wars has a new movie out kind of thing. These are like family farms that are just like strapping it up, saying like, look, customers are really finally give a damn about the food we're raising. Now we're going to take it to farmers market. And what we as customers have to do is say like, yes, thank you. We're going to show up. We're going to buy this food. We're going to, you know, create a relationship with this farmer and get to know, you know, not just one farmer, like a, you know, a whole market full of people, and like get behind this stuff.
That's awesome. So just, yeah, get out, just find a farmer. That's, and put them in your Rolodex or your iPhone. I guess people don't,
sure,
use, I don't, people, yeah, don't use Rolodexes anymore. So
yeah.
Awesome. All right. So there's probably some guys who are listening to this, like me, who are, I'm talking to you. I'm like, man, I want to become a farmer. I'm not sure that's doable right now, but there's a young guy who's like, he's 20. He was the age that you were when you decided, I want to become a farmer. Any advice, right, that you can give these guys who are considering this career? And in fact, I think you're actually writing a guest post for us about
Right, exactly. So,
Just kind of the Cliff Notes version, I guess.
Yeah, and I've touched on a bunch of these subjects within the podcast. But yeah, like the kind of like the Cliff Notes version of top 10 rules of like starting your own farm. Number one has to be stay out of debt. Okay, like what is it about our culture that wants to take shortcuts on everything? Okay, we want to like get to the finish line first. We want to win the video game first. You know, we want to have like the most likes on Facebook. Okay, you know, slow food, local food, organic farming has nothing to do with shortcuts. It's like the anti-shortcut. Okay, and what we do as a culture is we say like, look, I really want that $600,000 house, and man, I need it now. You know, I need it with a swimming pool, and I need it within like, you know, under a 40-minute commute to my house because I don't want to live in the city, but, you know, I really want to have this house. So we finance it with debt. And then guess what happens in 2008, in 2009? Okay, the chick, you know, to borrow a farm analogy, the chickens came home to roost. Yeah. Okay, and we all got in trouble. And this happens over and over again in farming because there is so much variability with the weather, with prices, with our own personal energy levels, with unexpected, you know, calamities, health problems. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And you can't have any of these things and farm successfully. Like you can only farm when everything's going right. So we have to assume that lots of things are going to go wrong, which is where I get down further in the post and I say expect to fail and accept failure, like value failure, okay? But, knowing that we're going to fail, like stay out of debt, okay? And that's the best way I can say, like just grow slowly and buy what you can afford. You know, if you can only afford to rent, you know, 5 acres and you've got a farm, then there's nothing small about 5 acres, man. You can grow a lot of vegetables and a lot, you know, you could raise a whole flock of free-range land hens on 5 acres and make money on it. You know, I challenge anybody to go out and raise 5 acres of tomatoes and tell me that's not a job. That's a small farm. Okay.
Yeah, for sure. So how is this whole experience, how long has it been, like 15 years in the making?
Mm-hmm.
About? How has this 15-year experience of saving the family farm, becoming a sustainable farming, how has it made you a better man?
Well, that's a pretty challenging question. I think the best way I can answer that is to say like, it made me a willing father. Okay, and that's going to sound a little weird for the first thing to say, but I've got an 8-year-old son. Okay. And the farm has been in my family for 7 generations now. And, you know, it doesn't really matter if it's been in my family for 1 generation or 10 generations. It's just, that's the way it's been. And for 7 generations or 6 generations before me, somebody had to say yes. Okay. Somebody had to say like, you know, I'm not taking that job in town. I'm not going to run for politics or whatever, you know, fill in the blank. I'm going to be a farmer. And when I came along, I had to be that person. Like a farm isn't a farm without a farmer. Okay. A farm is just a piece of land. It's a park. It's a woods that you drive by on the highway. It's a protected, you know, piece of land that was bought by some billion-dollar endowment. Okay. A farm has to have a farmer. And if I'm going to be able to pass anything on, like if I'm going to be, you know, fulfilled as a man, then I have to have a son or a daughter to come along behind me and say like, yeah, dad, like this is cool. You know, what you're doing works. And like, I want to do it too. Like, you know, the kid in the back of the crowd, like, pick me. I want to be on your kickball team. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of excitement. That's the way it's got to be. So like, you know, I didn't, when I was 20 years old, I wasn't thinking about any of this stuff. I was, you know, thinking about pizzas and going to watch a movie and you know, waking up with enough energy the next day to farm for, you know, 10 or 12 hours. But then you do this for year after year after year and your priorities and your goals just begin to shift. And when you enter, you know, when you bring another human life into the farm, it just really completes the picture for, you know, as another component of what sustainability really means.
Yeah. So it's, I guess it kind of inspired you to start leaving a legacy, right? Like you want to be able to pass this down to your children, your grandchildren.
Yeah. I think that's really well put. The word legacy is like a very poetic kind of encapsulation of exactly what I was talking about. And, you know, and there's plenty of legacies out there that, you know, that we're going for like that brass ring and we're going for the golden parachute, whatever. And, at the end of the day, we might look back on and be like, what did I really accomplish? You know, but if I can look back on and say like, look, we saved our family farm and I've got a kid that like wants to take it over from me, like a family business. Oh man, that's cool. You know,
that's awesome. So last question, Forrest, I know you probably got to get back out and shear some sheep or whatever you do.
I'm on my way to the butcher right after this.
Yeah. Are there any like life lessons that an average guy, say a guy is not going to be a farmer, but are there any life lessons that a man could take from the life of a farmer that could help them become a better man?
Yeah. I mean, let's think about being kids for a minute. What are the songs that we're taught when we're in kindergarten? We learn about Old MacDonald and like all the different animals on his farm. We are given like a play set for a barn with a farmer, and it's, you know, a donkey and a cow and all this stuff. And why, you know, after we're all so removed from being on farms ourselves, like why do we still value as a culture like the idea of a farmer? You know, there's got to be something there. You know, we don't give our kids like, you know, a cubicle to play with. Okay. We don't give them like a little guy sitting behind a desk with like, you know, a computer. Okay. Like, hey, you know, happy birthday. You know, play with this. Like, we don't do that. Like, why don't we do that? So like, you know, even if you don't want to get into farming, like we just have a cultural resonance that says like, look, there's certain things we value about farming. Like we can take these things away and make ourselves better. And like, what are those things? Man, I hate to say it, but it's poetry. Okay. You know, I know we're not supposed to read poetry, like, you know, Robert Frost, and everybody aside, who, you know, Robert Frost being a famous farmer himself and Wendell Berry for that matter. But like it's issues of faith. It's issues of dedication. It's selflessness. You know, it is the desire and the willingness to wake up for 50 years in a row and say, I'm going to put on my boots this morning and I'm going to go out and fix a broken down fence. I'm going to go help pull a calf out of a cow that's straining and it's going to take me all morning. You know, I'm going to go out in the rain this afternoon and, you know, take care of my chickens that are otherwise going to be out there getting pneumonia if like I don't take action right now, and like wash, rinse and repeat for 50 years. And then what do you get at the end? Do you get like severance package? Do you get like benefits, you know, when you retire? No, of course you don't. So what kind of person does that pay? I don't know. For some reason, our culture continues to value it. And I can't say I disagree.
Well, that's good stuff. I'm ready to like get my pitchfork and overalls.
Well, go for it, man.
Buy my farm. Well, Forrest, this has been a fascinating discussion. All you're listening, I highly recommend go out and get his book. It's an interesting read. So Forrest, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Brett. I appreciate the opportunity.
Our guest today was Forrest Pritchard. Forrest is the author of the book Gaining Ground, and you can find that on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. And if you guys could do me a favor, if you enjoy this podcast, this free podcast, if you can go to iTunes and give it a rating and a review, that would help me out a lot, help us help other people find the podcast. So if you can do that, I'd really appreciate it. So until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly. Thank you.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.